The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, but this morning we are as close to you as your home. We are a small Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to nurturing the spirit and transforming the world. I'm Preston Lutweiler, president of our Board of Trustees, and I want to personally welcome you this morning. Today, through the magic of Zoom, we are welcoming fellow UUs from Bucksmont Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, Unitarian Universalist Church of the Lehigh Valley, and First Unitarian Universalist Church of Berks County. We would like to thank Reverend Kevin Jago, Reverend Madeline Campbell, and Reverend Dr. Sandra Fees for working with our minister, Reverend Lawrence Pierce, to arrange 3 weeks of shared services in July and August. A friend recently likened this arrangement to a progressive dinner. This week, you are joining our service. Next Sunday, we are all invited to join Bucksmont service. And on August 15th, we will be joining services conducted by the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Lehigh Valley. We are able to do this through the technology that we all have learned through the pandemic. Wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our ever-expanding circle of compassion and caring. If you are visiting us today, you will notice in the Zoom chat a link to our virtual visitor card. Feel free to fill it out at any time during the service if you're interested in staying connected with us. Today, Ann Rostowski will light the and extinguish our chalice. Ann is a retired financial professional who has been a member of Thomas Paine UU Fellowship for 33 years. She serves on our Board of Trustees, our Worship Committee, our Children's Faith Development Task Force, and is chair of our Endowment Committee. The sermon today will be given by Reverend Dr. Larry Pierce, who has served as the part-time minister at our Thomas Paine UU Fellowship for the past 3 years. He begins as minister at First Unitarian Church of Wilmington on August 1st. In addition to serving within local congregations during his 34 years of ministry, Larry has directed a national program for clergy professional development, was a senior consultant with the Alban Institute, and worked as the director of congregational development for the Unitarian Universalist Association National Office. Larry has served on the adjunct faculty of Lancaster Theological Seminary. Much of the music you will hear today is courtesy of Christine Perry, a talented singer-songwriter who's been a member of our congregation since 2004. Christine has served in many roles at Thomas Paine UU Fellowship, including president of our Board of Trustees, membership team leader, and co-music director. Isaac Strader is a composer, performer, and educator based in Phoenixville area who has provided our fellowship with both original compositions for meditations as well as accompaniment for Christine's vocals. So thank you and enjoy the service today.
Thank you, Preston. So our call to worship begins with words adapted from Rabindranath Tagore. The same stream of life that runs through our veins night and day runs through the world and dances its rhythmic measures. It is the same life that shoots joy through the dust of the earth in numberless blades of grass and breaks into tumultuous waves of leaves and flowers. It is the same life that is rocked in the ocean cradle of birth and death, death in ebb and flow. As we begin our worship together this morning, let us pause to sense that stream of life within us. That dance of rhythmic measure all around us, and the ebb and flow of which we are all connected. Open our hearts to receive the whispers of wonder once more, open our imagination to envision grace that is our gift to receive once again. Come, let us worship together. And Anne will now light our chalice.
Good morning. Please join us by lighting your own chalice and also put your location in the chat. Life is a gift for which we are grateful. We gather in a community of congregations to celebrate the glories and the mysteries of this great gift. And now Preston will light the peace lamp.
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
So our gathering song is one that you may know. The lyrics will appear on the screen. It is entitled, For All That Is Our Life. And our song leader is Christine Perry, and our accompanist is Isaac Strader. You'll see their names a lot today. So let's join together whenever you're ready in singing our gathering song, For All That Is Our Life.
Let me tell you about Farmer Chin. Farmer Chin had a pretty typical life. He had his acres and his harvest to tend to. He had his animals and his family to help with the tasks. He also had neighbors who would sometimes visit and bring dumplings and their opinions. One day, Farmer Chin's strongest, most beautiful horse ran away, and the neighbors came immediately to express their sorrow for Farmer Chin having lost one of his most valuable possessions. And they asked him if he wasn't just sad as he could be about that change of fortune. After all, losing value is a horrible thing to experience. Farmer Chin's response was, maybe yes, Maybe no. The following day, that horse returned with 10 other wild horses, equally beautiful, equally strong, adding to Farmer Chen's stables. And the neighbors came running, celebrating, saying how wonderful it was that he now had all of these additional horses. Farmer Chen's response was, maybe yes, maybe no. The next day, his oldest child, who was to be the heir to the farm, the child who showed the most interest in inheriting this land and this responsibility, was taming the horses, or trying to, and their leg was broken in the process. And the neighbors came running once again to lament this change of fortune, saying how disappointed Farmer Chen must be that his child would now grow up, possibly with a limp for the rest of their lives. Isn't that just a sorrowful, sad state of affairs? Farmer Chen said, maybe yes, maybe no. A week later, an announcement went throughout the kingdom that war was at hand, and that the young, strong, able-bodied children would be conscripted into the army and into the service of the kingdom. But Farmer Chen's child wasn't able to go because their leg had just been broken. And the neighbors came running with the dumplings and the opinions, saying how wonderful it was, what a relief it must be to Farmer Chen that his child would not have to go and fight in the war. And Farmer Chen responded, I bet you can guess, maybe yes, maybe no. This story reminds us that we always have the choice to remain open, to embrace all the possibilities in a situation when we might be tempted to immediately assume that something is a tragedy or even a great boon, that we might take a second, reevaluate the situation and see how it unfolds. And you know, that story inspired me to write this song. The journey isn't over. The race is far.
So let us join together in a time of meditation and prayer. a time where we can open ourselves, our hearts, to whatever comes next. I encourage us to stay in the emerging personal meanings of this particular story that we've just heard for just a little while longer, as I invite us into these prayerful reflections about a current challenge you might be experiencing. Now, choose something that's a challenge for you right now, but don't necessarily pick the hardest, the most chronic situations for this very brief time that we have for inner reflection. For those chronic or most challenging situations, you'll need to be engaged in much more interaction and exploration than we have time for during this brief time of meditation and reflection. So pick something, a situation or condition that may feel moderately challenging to you, and hold that situation in the loving palm of your hand right now. I'm going to look at the screen and just see if, does everyone have something you can think of that's a challenge for you? Okay. So put hold that situation in this loving palm of your hand right now with compassion. Put aside your judging, critical self for just a minute. I'll set the timer because I'm sure that it'll be back in due time. Relax into giving yourself love, self-compassion, and empathy during these moments of reflection. From the wisest part of yourself, I can invite you to ask yourself these questions and listen to the responses, not just to the words that might come as responses, but also to images or sensations. Open yourself up to receive subtle or profound wisdom. So let's reflect together on these questions about that situation, that challenge. Are there ways that you could release whatever conclusions you've already come to about this challenge? Are there ways that you could take a maybe yes or a maybe no approach to the conclusion that you've already drawn? Can you open your heart for just a moment to view this challenge as a gift and an opportunity that might be lurking around the corner as well? What strengths or qualities would you need to grow in order to actually deal with this challenge? If you developed these strengths and qualities, what would become possible in other areas of your life? Is there a gift of knowledge that you can gain from this challenge? Is there a way that this challenging situation could inspire you to greater things? Don't force it. Just allow yourself during this time of meditation to explore what possible or potential gifts might also be in this challenge. What strengths or qualities could develop in you as you embrace this challenge? what gift of knowledge might be available to you, what wisdom might be there for you to discover. How could this challenging situation inspire you to greater things? So during the musical meditation, I'll invite you to reflect on those questions and just hold that challenge in the loving palm of your hand with compassion and with exploration. Spirit of life and love, open our eyes that we might see glimpses of truth you have for me. We'll now have the musical meditation. So most of the world, including me, knew Marcia Linehan as a prominent pioneer in the field of psychotherapy. She had developed a form of therapy that was specifically designed to help some of the most difficult persons, ones that many therapists had written off after these clients had had several hospitalizations, made attempts to harm themselves, weren't really participating in the therapy directly. And after many strained or failed attempts at helping, it was the rare therapists who would rise to help until this therapist, Marcia Linehan, developed a comprehensive approach to therapy that encompassed day-to-day practices, which she calls life skills, and surrounded each client with an ever-ready support system. I had studied her comprehensive approach and system of psychotherapy while doing my postgraduate program in counseling psychology. Her books, her training manuals, the many practices that she had developed to serve therapists and clients have informed many in the field of psychotherapy. She was the first, for example, to incorporate mindfulness approaches and practices within psychotherapy, which was informed by her Zen training decades before this became as prevalent as it is today. She was prolific in providing not just a philosophy, but practical approaches to dealing with the impasses that were often so hard to navigate. I'm speaking about Marcia Linehan, the developer of dialectical behavioral therapy, often known as DBT. So as not to be too mysterious about that word, dialectical, let me try to explain it in a way that she would, and then I'll add a metaphor. So in DBT understands that there's a dynamic balance between acceptance of oneself and one's situation in life on the one hand, and embracing change towards a better life on the other. And this dynamic balance is what DBT tries to work with. So we've all known those, even ourselves, who may be able to accept a situation, but are stymied and not very skillful at actually changing it, right? Okay, we also have known those, even ourselves, who can make changes that don't wholly respond to this knowledge that comes from a deeper acceptance of what actually needs changing. So to speak metaphorically, I could put it in this way. We might be able to accept that we're spinning our wheels in the same puddle for a long time. All the complaining in the world about your condition will not change the situation that you are stuck in the mud. You can have the awareness of it, but unless you take skillful, informed actions to propel yourself out of that particular mud puddle, nothing changes. Now, this is where any one of us can easily become distracted about thinking about what are the mud puddles in our own life, and where are we spinning our wheels, and where do we feel stuck? Just put that aside for the moment. We'll pick that up later. So let me continue this reason why I'm bringing up this story that I want to share about Marcia Linehan. On one particular day in June 2011, so about 10 years ago, Marcia Linehan was standing together in an auditorium of over 200 people at the Institute of Living, which is a prominent facility in Hartford, Connecticut. For most of those gathered there that day, they felt like they were going to learn once more from this teacher that they had admired and whose approach to helping others had dramatically changed their own way of doing their work as therapists or other helping professionals. Also in that room were a number of people who had been helped as patients by DBT. On that day, Linehan deviated from her usual story of how she had developed dialectical behavioral therapy. Typically, she told people that her work in developing DBT began when she got a grant from the National Institutes of Health, and it launched her into several years of exploratory and practical research. Most expected her to tell stories of numerous clients that she had helped and how those experiences had helped her develop her approach. But on that day, she told what she calls the real beginnings of dialectical behavior therapy. In front of all those colleagues, she began in this way. "Writing this talk has been one of the most difficult things I've done in my life." She then went on to reveal, in reality, the seeds of DBT were planted in 1961, when at age 18, I was admitted here to the Institute of Living. You can imagine the gasps of people in the room sitting back and taking in this information that they hadn't actually known about Marcia Linehan. She continued to tell the story of how she had been the kind of girl in high school who might be voted most popular or most likely to succeed. But then she said, as my senior year progressed, this confident girl began to disappear. I did not know what happened to me. No one knew. My experience of the institute, being at that institute, was one of descending into hell, an out of control storm of emotional torture and absolute anguish. There was no escape. God, where are you? I whispered each day, but got no answer. So people were taking on this information as she was revealing it for many for the first time. She went on to say that when she arrived at the institute at age 18, she was supposed to be there for 2 weeks. She didn't get out of there until for 2 years and a month. And for the most of the time that she was there, she was always on the locked unit. She was in a dire situation. At the end of her time at the institute, as she writes in her riveting memoir, Building a Life Worth Living, she says, I made a promise to God, a vow that I would get myself out of hell, and that once I did, I would find a way to get others out of hell as well. And she concludes, DBT was and is my best effort to date at keeping that vow. So this revelation that she made rocked the therapy world for a while. Former patients who had been helped by DBT recognized that she was one of us. One of the reasons she met with these former patients was to give them hope through her own life experience. Lina had to wait 40 years, imagine it, 40 years, after her work had become established and respected, before she could reveal the real source of her work came from her own troubling experiences. So in her memoir, Building a Life Worth Living, it was clear that this transformation was not instantaneous. She continued to have her own life struggles, and she continued to stay true to her vow to help others, to help herself, and to help others. Her acute struggles and her vow had prepared her to give a gift, what I call a relentless gift, from her own life and through her work. Her generosity also extended to her life. She often let the unhoused live in her basement. She frequently let young adults or recently divorced women up to this day live in her home. These, my friends, are the kinds of stories my soul thrives on. You see, from an early age, I first had a chance to have library time at the Catholic grammar school that I went to. And I had been drawn to biographies and autobiographies like Lena Hand's. And sure, in that particular school, I had plentiful supply of books about Catholic saints and martyrs. So I cut my teeth on those books, and then I just had to branch out. And so I would be the first to admit now how nerdy this was, particularly as I think about most of my grammar school contemporaries were reading about superheroes and comic books or childhood detectives like the Hardy Boys, Encyclopedia Brown, or Nancy Drew. How many of you read any of those? Raise your hand, be proud. Okay, great. So particularly on one day when I spotted one of my classmates reading a Hardy Boys book that was tucked inside the big science textbook in class one day, I had to figure out what the excitement was all about. So I binged on some of these fiction books for a few weeks to see what all the fuss was about. And not to disparage the usefulness or the entertainment value of this literature, it is just that the mysteries that drew me, for whatever reasons, well, for a lot of reasons, were about life itself, about real lives that had struggled oftentimes against insurmountable obstacles. And then these lives, these people did something about it, usually to help themselves, but most often to help others and or to address the conditions in the world that oppressed others. This genre of books available in my Catholic school library, just imagine, often included those who were tortured for their faith or had some kind of pious sounds of music, score playing in the background as you turn the pages. Can you imagine? And so I just had to branch out a little bit more, and I rode my bike to a new territory, the public library. And so my lifetime interest in lives and how people live their lives, how they transmuted obstacles, how they offered their lives as a gift, sometimes from the darkest places of their lives, have always fascinated me. Marsha Linehan's 339-page memoir, I just devoured it because it activated that archetype within me. And of course, I am drawn not just to the stories like Marsha Linehan or only the lives of those who get written up. I'm also drawn to our lives as well, the lives of others that never make it to a book. In my 3 years at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, I've heard the stories of those, many of those who are here joining us in this worship today, who also moved through what seemed like insurmountable conditions at the time. A life-threatening illness, an addiction, the tragic death of a daughter, an abusive childhood, the losses of marriages, the losses of faith that had once been one's rock and one's salvation, about journeys of moving through and moving on. I'm sure that these same stories are part of the experiences of those who are joining us today from other congregations as well. The resounding message to me from these stories and from the story that we heard from Leah Morris today, maybe yes, maybe no, is that we are more than our temporary conditions that might seem to define us at a particular moment. But in fact, the story always continues one way or another. Some of what is fascinating about the Hebrew scriptures for many is that the stories haven't been over-sanitized. The heroes are often those who often have done some horrific things, or the Jewish people have often experienced some horrific circumstances, but these circumstances in and of themselves may have shaped, but not fully defined, the outcomes of those characters or that people. People read these stories and other religious literature to remind ourselves a very fact about life, that the stream of life, that the ebb and flows of life, that the rhythm of life is like a dance that continues and moves on, and we do not have to prematurely conclude the flow of that life. Moreover, as Unitarian Universalists, we are part of a religious tradition that invites us to see that it is within life itself that we form our faith. We are part of a religious tradition that recognizes not only do our life experiences shape us, that we in turn often shape our personal life experiences as well, as we are called to reshape the limiting social conditions that oppress others. We dare to turn our attention to this life and to sing verses such as these from one of my favorite hymns. Here on the paths of every day, here on the common human way, is all the stuff the gods would take to build a heaven, to mold and make new Edens, ours the task sublime, to build eternity in time. We are part of a faith community that honors the life well lived and lived deliberately. We have our own saints of sorts, those whose lives provide lessons and wisdom for us for living this examined and deliberate life for ourselves and for others. We have many sources. Henry David Thoreau comes to mind, who shares this wisdom. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and to see if I could not learn what it had to teach and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. I did not wish to live what was not life. Living is so dear, nor did I wish to practice resignation unless it was quite necessary. Can you sense that quotes like that are like spark plugs for me? They ignite that sense of our this worldly, this faith oriented towards creating and shaping lives and meaning. Now let's put aside some of the facts about Thoreau's Walden experiment. You know, we don't have to know how many times he went out to dinner in other people's houses or who did his laundry or any other things, but we can recognize within his words and the words of others that we are part of fashioning an eyes wide open, this world matters kind of faith, recognizing that our response to the conditions of our lives and the conditions that limit others is actually a religious task. Aligned with our approach to being human religiously, Howard Thurman offers this teaching: don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive, and go do it, because what the world needs is people who come alive. I have found that this particular religious sentiment is reinforced even by these words from Representative John Lewis, who died just 1 year ago, and who indeed was a living example of this not letting the horrific conditions that one might have experienced define what could be possible, that those conditions could become a relentless gift for others and for others' lives as well. Lewis says, you must be able and prepared to give until you cannot give anymore. We must use our time and our space on this little planet that we call Earth to make a lasting contribution, to leave it a little better than we found it. And now that need is greater than ever before. So there's many examples and many words that I could draw upon to reinforce this understanding that how we live our lives, how deliberately we live our lives, how we give from our lives, even our most painful lives, painful experiences in our lives, can be a relentless gift. Now, it's easy for many of us to think retrospectively on what are some of those painful, challenging experiences in our lives that have given us the qualities that we cherish in ourselves today, how we would not be who we are if we had not experienced some of these circumstances, how we would have not met our partner or engaged in the work that we are in today. We might not have committed ourselves to living or being or working in the particular areas of work that we do, sometimes because of painful circumstances that we might have gone through. But each of us can find ways to construct meaning retrospectively, but can we also, rather than just after the fact, also find ways to get the lessons of what's happening right now, to find the most challenging task might be to not think just retrospectively about what gifts are relentlessly trying to reveal themselves to us, but the challenge might be for us this moment, this day, my friends, to also ask ourselves right now, right here in the present moment, in our present circumstances, not after the fact, but in the here and now, what are those relentless gifts that are occurring, not retrospectively, but right now, begin to articulate what are the gifts that are wanting to emerge. The three questions that I offered in the meditation today are a way to begin to explore the conditions of our current circumstances and see what gift or opportunity might also be present there. Again, not forcing the meaning, but exploring the meaning. So what strengths or qualities would you need to confront this challenge? And how, if you develop those strengths or qualities, what would become possible in other areas of your life? How could this situation that you're now in, how could you inspire you to do greater things? We can engage in a compassion and a loving way with our current circumstances through lingering in these questions. Maybe that's why I resonate so much with this classic story told by Leah Morris this morning. Maybe yes, maybe no, because the story holds a perspective that it seems like even tragic circumstances might hold within them an opportunity. Let's face it, at any point in our life or our relationships, at any point in our lives of our congregations or our society, we may be willing to write the conclusion haphazardly or abruptly. We might want to shellack some preemptive conclusion to it all. However, meaning always emerges when we engage and explore what the meaning could be. Why rush it when the clay is still wet, while everything is still in the process of unfolding within us and around us, if we could but sense it and make ourselves available to sense what wants to emerge? We have to constantly confront the forces that are within us and around us that want to pronounce some conclusion preemptively or prematurely. There will always be the naysayers among us and within us, those who know how it is or how it should be and how it should always be. Let's find the wise sage words within us in those moments and say out loud, and maybe you can even say them out loud now. No one can hear you, you're on mute. Just repeat after me, maybe yes, maybe no. There will always be those who are just quick to judge, but even quicker to prejudge. The pre-offended who need no evidence from life itself because they've got it all figured out. How it will be and how it should be. Maybe in the whispers of our own heart, we can say, even as we repeat aloud after me once more, maybe yes, maybe no. There will always be those who want to limit the potential and the possibilities or the liberation of others because of their slanted view of what is a given, what is immutable. We're hearing these days all around us their response, maybe yes, maybe no. We hear all around us today the voices of those women, Black, Indigenous people, people of color, LGBTQ people, the voices of many who no longer wish to participate in their own diminishment. These voices have always been among us, and may we sing alongside of them and hear them. I imagine their words from another one of my favorite songs by Lobby Sapphire. The higher you build your barriers, the taller I become. The further you take my rights away, the faster I will run. You cannot deny me. You can decide to turn your face away, no matter, because there's something inside so strong. So we are witnesses to all of these voices within us and around us. And over the last few months, I found it helpful to reflect upon my experiences at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, where I've served part-time for 3 years. Half of these 3 years, we met together regularly and formally and informally in our own building. And the other half, we met apart virtually. These would not have been the conditions that I would have chosen, but these were the circumstances that many of us had to endure during this pandemic. There were some relentless gifts, however, alongside of these circumstances, and perhaps the congregations that are joining us today can think about what have been some of those relentless gifts in spite of, maybe even because of, the circumstances that we have been through. We'll still be discovering those gifts in the months ahead. Yeah. Some people have dropped out because Zoom isn't their thing. yet some more direct connections were also made and voices heard that we didn't necessarily hear from pre-COVID. Yes, a few carried more of the burden, yet gradually some more talents and people came forward to do the ministries of the congregation. Sure, we didn't meet as often or as informally, but yet worship became our most central way of connecting to one another and to what matters. We've been through some trying circumstances, polarizing elections, and we've endured toxic, polarizing political leaders. We've experienced insurrections and threats to our democracy. We were witness to pronounced racial violence that once again spotlighted the prevalence of that problem in our society. We know in our bones that current circumstances do not define us. We now have relentless gifts to draw upon. And whatever the circumstances, may we know, may we always know that there is something inside so strong, that there's something among us so strong. So may it be. So it is our practice to take a time following the sermon to do some reflection together on what we call matters of the heart. And this is a time for us to reflect personally around a particular joy that we might be holding or a particular concern or sorrow that we might be holding. First, we take a time to reflect on that. And during the musical interlude, as we're reflecting, we might also decide that if we want to briefly means like probably no more than a sentence, briefly share whatever that significant joy or significant sorrow might be, then we can write it in the chat, and these will be read by the chat chaplain, or we can share them with one another. We do have a lot more people than we usually do, so let's try to manage our time the best we can. And first of all, during the musical interlude, let's do that reflection on a significant joy or concern, and then we'll get instructions on how to share. Again, you could write it in the chat, or if you want to share it verbally, you'll get instructions on that.
Bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. The lyrics will appear on the screen, and feel free to sing along.
Stirrings of compassion blow in the wind, rise in the sea. Ooh.
And now I will extinguish the chalice with the words of Theodore Parker, which will appear on the screen, I believe. And then you can join me. Be ours a religion, which, like sunlight, goes everywhere. Its temple, all space. Its shrine, the good heart. Its creed, all truth. Its ritual, works of love. Its profession of faith, divine living.
Our closing song is Soon the Day Will Arrive. The lyrics will appear on the screen. Join in. As you're willing and able to do so, let's sing together. Soon the day will arrive.
Soon the day will arrive when we will be together, and no longer will we live in fear. And the children will smile without wondering whether on that day thunder clouds will appear. Wait and see, wait and see what a world there can be if we share, if we care, you and me. Wait and see what a world there can be if we share. Some have dreamed, some have died to make a bright tomorrow, and our vision remains in our hearts. Now the torch must be passed with new hope, not in sorrow, and a promise to make.